Hi, I'm Delta Work, and welcome to Very Delta. This is a podcast where I look beautiful, speak extemporaneously, and I invite people onto the couch to, I don't know, just tell me stuff. Very Delta is the show for the woman who keeps sweet and low in her glove box. Are you Very Delta?
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom!
Are you a lady like me? Introspective, beautiful. Oh, are you intellectual like me? Beguiled by a bargain? You like wild times? Oh, like me? Are you serving the community like me? Well, if you are, then you must be Very Delta. Hello, my gorgeous listeners and spectators. Welcome back to another episode of Very Delta. I'm excited to be here today. We have another special guest, but I think there's a few things that we need to cover and revisit, things that I've talked about on social media, on other platforms, in other ways. I know it's Monday, so you're still picking up the pieces from your weekend, probably your Saturday or Sunday brunch, respectively. But as I said, I think we need to revisit a few things that are super, super important. You know, I started performing drag brunches maybe 20 years ago. I mean, I've been performing now well into three decades. But brunches started to become really, really popular in like the early 2000s, I feel like, for me anyway. We were doing the brunchettes in Long Beach at the time, myself, Psychedella, Jules, Tammy Brown. I mean, this is so far back that Tammy Brown was actually using index cards to make individual flyers and she would pass them out. Like, that's how far back. but in the past 20 or so years, I feel like the face of brunch, drag brunch, has changed. You can literally have a drag brunch anywhere, and there is a drag brunch anywhere, especially here in LA. I mean, you cannot throw, a vegan wrap without hitting one. I mean, there's just like literally a brunch everywhere, which is wonderful. It provides a lot of opportunity for drag entertainers to work. It provides a lot of outlet for people. But drag brunch is really sort of a safe zone for people who've never been to a drag show because they feel like it's during the day. It's a little more controlled for them. I think a lot of people that have never been to a drag brunch, specifically, the heterosexual community, they feel like it's a safe place because if they go to a drag show at night, you know, the freaks come out at night, I think is their feeling. So during the day, it's a little safer. Plus, you know, who is not going to be interested in unlimited mimosas? But when you come to these brunches, what has happened is we've obviously been infiltrated with people celebrating big things like big birthdays, big bridal parties, baby showers, all of it is happening. And that's great. We want you to celebrate. We want you to have a good time. These types of parties are what keep us really going. What happens is because drag brunch is such a playground for people who've never been to a drag show before, everything has to be sort of made very safe in a way. Like, it needs to be approachable for everyone. It has to be comfortable. So, you know, sing-alongs are what you're probably going to hear, songs you've heard on the radio. It's not going to get too extremely complicated. Shock value is important sometimes just because you want to pull people in. And listen, for all intents and purposes, drag entertainers are doing brunch that early in the morning because, of course, they want to be tipped. And you're going to be tipped by people who are loving what you're doing. What happens, though, when you're a guest at a show like this, a brunch show, is it's very easy for people to say, I want to go. I want to have my bridal shower there. And I'm going to bring all my friends who've never been before. If you're doing that, it is your sole responsibility as our ally and as somebody who's supporting drag to let everyone in your party know exactly what's going to go down. Don't make them think that they're going to Dave and Buster's because that's not what's happening. Don't think that they're going to Disneyland because that's not what's happening. Certainly, it may be sort of like a Disney for drag queens in a way because it's safer and it's more approachable. But let these people know there is... Yeah, they need to keep their hands inside the ride at all times. They're going to hear songs they like. They're going to want to get up and dance and have a good time. No, Don't. Let them know that's not what happens. This is a piece of live theater. Certainly not saying it's a Broadway show and certainly not comparing it to that. But in the same sense, there are people that you are paying to watch. And so we want them to have a really good time. You never know if people are going to dance and do a cartwheel or whatever it is that they're going to do. And just like, you know, being anywhere in public, just because something is exciting doesn't mean that you can touch it or grope it or pull at it. A lot of people it's become really tactile when it comes to getting a little more drunk and a little more free and having a good time. And I don't think they intend to do the most, but they end up doing the most because none of their friends are correcting them. Certainly not the person whose birthday it is, because now they're drunker than everybody, and they forgot to tell them, "Hey, we have to tip the performers." Well, you don't have to tip the performers, but it's, you know, par for the course. It's what happens. But more than anything, at least don't pull their wigs off. Like, at least don't try to take the dollar and, you know, do that thing where you like hold it up and I call it the carrot and the horse. Like, no, do you want this dollar? Come get this dollar. Or waving it over the head of some unsuspecting heterosexual cis male who had no idea that they were coming to this. And then once they see it, are obviously uncomfortable. Generally, they're having a good time. They will have a good time. But you can always tell there's somebody that's a little bit uncomfortable. And in doing that, you're just going to make it worse. You're really going to make it worse, especially when you're doing that or you're trying to tell them like, "Ooh, come on, get in their crotch," or that kind of thing. Like it becomes a scary place for them where they're not going to be like acclimated to it. They're not going to become comfortable with it. They're going to immediately think, "This is always going to be this way. I'm always going to be put on the spot. I'm always going to be made to be uncomfortable in this situation." Some people just don't like that. Listen, when it's my birthday and we go, I don't know, to Cheesecake Factory, I don't particularly want everybody to come up and sing happy birthday to me. I appreciate it. I'll absolutely take that free piece of cake. But I don't want a scene to be made simply because I just want to have a good time. Some people are that way. They don't want to do that. So just because you come to the brunch and you think it's funny speaks to a couple of different things. First of all, that you are fine making someone else feel extremely uncomfortable as long as you get to laugh. And then on top of that, that you absolutely think that the drag queens are there as a complete and total utter joke. And it couldn't possibly be seen as something that needs to be respected. It's something that you own and that you need to objectify, sexualize, or completely and totally run off the rails as a total utter joke. This is not to say don't come. This is to say when you come, just have the bare minimum of respect and let people, because some people too don't even know that tipping is a thing until they see it. And they're like, "Oh, I want to do that too. I want the drag queens to come over or drag kings to come over and dance around and have a good time with us and take a couple of pictures." That's amazing. Speaking of pictures, if there's not a step and repeat and there's not an intention to take pictures and you come to the brunch, if a queen or a king or any entertainer offers to take a picture with you, that is great. But when you get up and start pulling them over to your table while they're performing and tell them, "Come on, stop, we're doing pictures, it's my birthday," it says to everyone in the room that you are the only person that's there to be entertained. They are not to be entertained. And when they see the drag queen or drag entertainer stop, it says to them, "Now it's our turn. You're not here to perform. You're not here to get tipped. You're only here to walk around and take pictures," which is not the case. We love pictures. We want to take the pictures. But unfortunately, we have to be performing the show for everyone to enjoy. It's not just, you know, it doesn't come with bottle service that the drag queen just stops and hangs out at your table. We will love to do that, but there's 3 seatings sometimes in one day. At some locations, 4 seatings. You're just not going to get the personal service for the entire duration of a number, much less the whole show. Because what happens is, as soon as the show's over, you have to clear out. Linens have to be changed. Floors have to be mopped. Food has to be reset for the next group of people. So what happens is, because you may want all of that extra personal service, it delays not only everyone at your seating experiencing the show, it delays it for every other seating. So it becomes kind of fucked up. I mean, this sounds a little heavy, but these principles are basically just purely not being an asshole, like not being a dick. If you are able to like walk out of your house and go, "Oh, other people exist in the world. Oh, I'm going to be in a restaurant with 250 other people. Oh, they want to watch the show too. Okay. Well, I would like to tip. Maybe I should get some ones. Maybe I should tell everyone in my party." Like, you have to remind everyone in your group that so they're all on the same page as to what's happening. Certainly, at the minimum, let them know, you know, not to pull on people, not to throw up on people. Don't think it's funny to hand someone a receipt instead of a dollar as a tip. Certainly don't have the drag queen lean down for a picture and try to shove a potato wedge in her mouth. Like, I know you think that's hilarious because, like, degrading people is hilarious, but it's not. We look forward to seeing you at brunch as long as you behave yourselves. And most people do. It's not everyone. But, you know, these stories come out quite often and I experience them. And I just want to share with you because I know that's not your intention to behave that way. But someone has to correct you. And that's why I'm here. That's why it's very Delta. I know your brunch behavior will never be the same, so let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to welcome my friend who's giving more than brunch. He's the whole damn meal. When we come back, we're going to be chatting with my friend Sharak. The new Star series Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly it is. You won't be able to look away as you've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. Can you imagine setting your son up to seduce a king? Girl, I couldn't take my eyes off the screen as I watched this historical psychodrama unfold. The show is full of wit, scandal, and action in a genre-bending story that is as sexy and audacious as it gets. You need to check it out. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and on the Stars app. And we are back. I'm so excited. You know, I've been working in nightlife now for, as I said, three full decades. But I've been able to meet some of the coolest people and remain friends with them for a very, very long time. And this person is exactly that type of person that I'm talking about. I'm so excited to welcome to the show the one and only Sharak. Hi, Sharak.
Hi, Delta.
Thank you for making time to be here.
Thank you for having me.
So you, you are kind of a man of a few words because you are very quiet and you're introspective and you like to sort of like look at things and evaluate things. But you do have a career that is to other people that seems like sort of outrageous or something. But it's not really an outrageous career, I don't think. Do you think what you do is outrageous to other people?
I don't think so. I think especially within the community, it's not so outrageous. But if I tell people outside, they're like, wait, you do? Can I say porn?
Well, we're talking about your career as a plant dad.
Oh, as a plant dad. Oh, okay. That career, yes. No, yeah. People are like, whoa, you grow plants? That's so crazy.
Right. Yeah. And what about this plant? What do you think of this plant?
That's a Phalaenopsis. It's beautiful.
Oh, you know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. It's a type of orchid.
Now, my question is, with these clips on here, yeah, right? So they're intended to hold it up, and I'm assuming support it and also for display purposes, but what happens if the clips weren't there, like in nature? I heard from my producer that they often grow on rocks.
Yeah, actually they're epiphytes. They grow on the sides of trees and sometimes rocks. And in nature, they would kind of be growing like horizontally off the trunk of a tree or mm-hmm. almost upside down sometimes. And the flower sprays would hang down and be accessible to pollinators. So they wouldn't be straight up like that, mm-hmm. like they sell them.
How did you get interested in plants? And also, I know you love like wildlife, because if you follow Sharak on any social media platform, you're going to see plants, but you're also going to see wildlife as well. You're so attracted to that, and they're attracted to you.
Yeah, it's just part of, I guess since I was a kid, I just connected with plants and animals. I was kind of bullied and kind of shy, so plants and animals were my refuge. And also being Iranian, animals are just part of our culture. So especially birds in particular, poultry mm-hmm. and pigeons and canaries and all kinds of stuff like that. So it was just, I was kind of brought up in it.
They come to you though. I mean, they literally flock to you.
I don't go looking for them. I think it's not me though. I think I just pay attention, or I've learned to pay attention. Mm-hmm. So I've noticed things maybe that some other people may not. And just because I've trained myself from like a young child to do so.
Right.
Yeah. I remember when my dad, like just to give you an example, like, my dad, for I think it was my third birthday, he went to downtown LA to like the live food markets with his truck and bought every poultry live that you could imagine. And that was my third. He showed up. My mom was going to kill him. And that was my third birthday present. Like geese and ducks and chickens and all kinds of stuff. So that was like the kind of upbringing I had.
Did you have the space for that?
Not really.
Okay.
And I grew up in LA. So like, and we weren't like way out in the valley where you can do that kind of stuff. We were kind of like on the west side.
No.
So our neighbors hated us. We were kind of like the Beverly Hillbillies.
Damn.
Just not in Beverly Hills and Persian.
And was that I mean, being Beverly Hillbillies and then being Persian, is that something, when you say you were being bullied, is that something that played into that at that time?
I don't know if it was that in particular. I was heavy set. I was super effeminate. And I think also brown, and those three things combined just set me up.
Yeah.
I felt like I was set up.
Yeah. I wish I could relate to that. You were heavy set, effeminate, and brown. Yeah. I don't see myself that way. But that must be difficult for people like you.
Yeah.
I'm teasing. No, I know what you mean. I mean, and that's the thing. That's part of why we have remained friends. Outwardly, people would think that we do something completely different.
Yeah.
But the reality is what we do is completely almost exactly the same. It, obviously, it facilitates in other ways. But I've known you, like if other people may not know if they hear the name Mimi Mosavi. But I know Mimi Mosavi. And you, tell us about Mimi Mosavi.
Mimi Mosavi was my drag persona.
Yeah.
And she came out. Well, I think it was like 2009, 2010-ish. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in West Hollywood, basically. I used to go, and I was surrounded by queens and performers and trans people. And like, it was always something that was felt safe to me. And then so when I came back, I lived in Hawaii. And when I came back, it was around 2009. And I just started hanging out with the queens again and going out. And then I just went out and dragged one night, and it just kind of snowballed from there. And Mimi is my great aunt's name, and she's like this very glamorous, fabulous woman. And Mosavi is my part of my last name, so just Mimi Mosavi.
And and that's the thing is like that when I say that like what we do is similar.
Yeah.
You're considered, when people look at you visually, the archetype of, you know, masculinity and virility and all of these things, and that is true. But with that comes this compassion that you also have, and this fearlessness in telling people, like, I love drag. I do drag. Like, you physically do drag. Maybe you're not doing it at the moment, but it'll always be part of you.
Yeah.
You've always been a super, super, super staunch supporter of the trans community, especially the trans community of color. These are just things that you aren't. That you've always been. This isn't because you now have this bigger light on you. That's always who you've been. I mean, and that's why I've always wanted to be around you, because I've always thought this person is so like-minded. Like, and it's real. And not everyone in our community that gives off the archetype of masculinity is comfortable or strong enough to do that. Do you notice that?
I do notice that. And I think there's a lot of fear involved with it. I don't really know. I can only speak for myself and my own experience. I was also that, and you remember back then.
Right.
And I remember coming to your shows and just being blown away by you. I was a big fan from the beginning. And this is pre-Drag Race.
When we were all running around.
And it was fun. Right. I felt like it was just fun. People were out there having fun. But yeah, there weren't muscle queens, is what they called me.
Right.
There weren't muscle queens doing drag, especially not Persian ones. And I just said, you know, this is a part of me. It's a part of my culture as a queer person, and it was just another way for me to express myself and kind of say fuck you to the archetype or stereotype that they were trying to fit me into.
Yeah, I mean,
does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think that's why, you know, when I decided that I was going to do like this kind of a format, I was like, I really want people who I've known for such a long time to be part of the beginning of this show, because the opinions are very, very similar. You know, we're not exactly the same age, but we fall in sort of a similar mindset and view of things. I feel like also too, like Drag Race is sort of a definitive time for people where people say, oh, I remember all of this before Drag Race or after Drag Race. So there's quite a few of us that do remember what drag looked like.
It was different.
It was different.
And there was a lot, not that there isn't now, but it was, I don't want to sound bad, but it was fun.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It was so much fun, and now it feels like it's a little, it's become commercialized and a little bit more. I don't know.
I know you're not shitting on anybody.
Yeah,
because that's not who you are.
Because Drag Race is amazing too, and it's brought drag to the forefront and into queer culture around the world, into people's living rooms who have never experienced it before. So in that sense, it's amazing. But there was like a snapshot of time in LA drag. Because that's my experience. That was just so much fun, and everybody was just like doing their own thing, and it was a lot. It was good.
And of course, not even just Drag Race, but like social media in general.
Yeah,
before
exactly.
that, I was talking with Raja about how we used to have Odyssey magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And like if you got your picture in Odyssey, it was
yeah.
like that was the only social media there was. So you were like, ooh, did you see me? I'm the yeah. Sneech of the week or whatever it was. You know, that kind of thing. So getting to hear people talk about that and you being able to see that. I mean, I know you're friends with people like Alana Starr and like people that really have seen that
yeah.
and have seen this, and you still manage to maintain this friendship and this connection that will always be. And it's just, you know, as somebody who I feel like we do similar things with careers in nightlife, I'm still able to look back at it and think like, I know people are looking at, they'll see Raja, they'll see you, they'll see me, they'll see whoever they, and they're like, those people aren't connected. And it's like, you have no idea.
No idea.
The connection is beyond what you physically look like. That, in fact, it was never about that. It's never going to be about that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Because it came from a time period before any of the, like, there wasn't this social media stardom back then.
Right.
It was very much more real and tangible. Like, it wasn't just out in the metaverse.
Right.
So I felt like you developed like closer connections. I don't know.
Oh, I agree.
I don't know. It was kind of, it was a fun time for
what,
sure.
before I forget about it, what did you call this plant?
Phalaenopsis.
Okay. And that's orchid. A type of orchid.
Yes.
Now, this is a new orchid that was brought to the table. Well, I don't know what happened to this orchid that was here earlier, but is there any chance for her, for him, for them?
For them? Yeah, that's also Phalaenopsis. That's uh-huh. the more common white one. And this is an anthurium down on the bottom.
It's down here.
Yeah, that's not an orchid. But yeah, I mean, they're flowers. They're not permanent. So once the flower does die, the plant is going to remain. Mm-hmm. And if you're good at growing them, you can always have it like rebloom.
Can this be overwatered?
Yes.
Okay.
Orchids like to be underwatered rather than overwatered.
Okay.
Because, like I said in the beginning, they're epiphytes, which means they grow on trees, which means they don't really have their roots in soil. So if they stay wet too long, they will rot.
Mm.
So like on a tree, it stays humid and moist, but it's not wet. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been wet too long before.
Yeah.
I've rotted for a long time. So I think I just need to be around a rock or like Chirac.
Chirac.
You know what I mean? That
yeah.
would, so I won't be so wet.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? If we just keep talking. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Like and it could rebloom. You never know. In the right conditions, they're almost like ever blooming, actually. Like they
okay.
just keep going.
Do they have a season?
Orchids, not so much. I mean, I think where they're from, there's like a wet and dry season, but it's always hot and humid. So they kind of bloom year round.
Okay.
For most orchids.
Do you like it? Do you like a dry heat or do you like a moist heat?
I like LA dry heat.
Oh, you do?
Not the desert. Not like Palm Springs dry heat.
No.
It's just like I want to die.
Yeah, I can't do it either.
the older I get, the more I sweat, and I'm just like, I can't do it.
Yeah. Especially today, like especially now.
Yeah.
It's getting the planet's on fire, and we're all dying.
This is true.
Yeah. Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to Chirac a little bit more about a career you might be familiar with. We'll take a break. And we're back. We are back with my friend and yours too. Hopefully, the one and only Chirac is here with me. We've been talking about plants. We've been talking about the old days, of course. people may know you as, and I don't always know the proper term because I'm not trying to like necessarily like clean everything up or PC everything up because I think everything's fine, but I'm speaking from the outside.
Yeah.
So I say to people like, oh, my friend is an adult content provider, but I don't know if that's the word that you're comfortable with.
Adult content provider. Content creator. I think that's more geared towards, or has become more geared towards, like, fan site content. So, but yeah, I fall in that category.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember when people would be like, oh, so-and-so's a porn star. That person's a porn star.
Yeah.
But I'm like, are they a star or are they an actor?
Porn actor.
Because some are stars.
Some are stars.
Right.
And I don't really know what the distinction is between star and just an actor. But yeah, I'm a porn actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
What would you say is a porn star?
I would say you're a porn star. I mean, yeah. I would think so. Yeah, because people know your name. And that's and you like to be, and Chirac is the name that you're comfortable with everybody calling you because that's your name.
That's my name. It's my actual name.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So that's what, I mean, so if you see that, you know what I mean, and you're calling it out while you're looking at pornography,
yeah,
you're really calling out Chirac's real name.
My real name.
Yeah.
I just don't like, it feels funny calling myself a porn star. Like, right. Oh, I'm a porn star. But if somebody, I'm like, okay.
I saw somebody, because that's always the thing, because you want other people to clap for you. You're not trying to clap for yourself necessarily.
Yeah.
And I know people that will, I've seen them like label themselves like, I am world famous so-and-so impersonator. And I'm like, are you sure you're world famous? Because maybe you should let somebody else call you that. And you just say like, I am a tribute artist or I am whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How did you get to your early beginnings? Hanging out in West Hollywood, riding the bus to Arena, you know, from there to where you are now. What were those beginnings in the community?
I was probably around 16. I mean, you remember the Arena off of Santa Monica and Highland, and then right behind it was Circus.
Right.
But Arena had a night where it was, I think, all ages, or I think if you were 16 and above, you could get in. So at the time, my mom was living in a back house, like a converted garage in Culver City. And I would sneak out and take the bus from Culver City to West Hollywood, Santa Monica and Highland. And that was where I became exposed to the community.
Right.
And in particular, I mean, not only the gay community, but the trans community kind of took me under their wing because there was a large trans presence in that area at the time. And there still is. But and that's where I started seeing performers and like drag performers and stuff like that. So that's really where I got my start. And then it kind of went as I got older, it kind of drifted further west so that I could start getting into the clubs and things like that in West Hollywood. Right. But I started at a really, really young age. It's not, I don't recommend it.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it was a different time for all of us.
It was a different time, yeah.
It was.
It's like the early 2000s. And I would see like go-go dancers at the Abbey or at Mickey's or like places like that. And I kind of like put not only go-go dancers, like drag queens and stuff like that. I put them all like on pedestals as a young queer kid. Mm-hmm. And those were kind of
like examples.
Examples, yeah, that I really had growing up because we didn't have a presence in the media. I mean, Ellen, I think, was a little bit later, and then, I mean, RuPaul, and I mean, that was basically it.
Right.
So those are my queer examples. So that's kind of how I went in that direction.
How old are you?
I'm 37. I'll be 38 next month.
Yeah. So I'm just under 10 years older than you. And I can remember, like in high school as well, like maybe 16, 17.
Yeah.
I had a lesbian friend. She had a car.
Uh-huh.
And then we had another friend who was just kind of like an outcast. He's a straight guy, but he was like just kind of an outcast. And we would always, come like on a weekend or even on a weekday. And we would drive out and we would go to this coffee house called Little Frida's, which is not around anymore.
Okay.
It's now like a nail shop or something.
Okay.
And it was like a full lesbian coffee house. And it was back in the day when you would go to the bathrooms and outside would be those things that held all kinds of postcards.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Oh my God, yeah.
And we would get a stack of postcards and we would live our lives and we would go to an adult bookstore and we would just have fun. And we would go get a cookie at Mrs. Fields across the street from Rage. And we would do all of that stuff. And then it was like that moment going back where when we got in the car, we were like, we can only be free again when we come here again.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you remember that feeling?
Absolutely.
And so now when I do go into West Hollywood and I like even just driving down, I'll look around, I'll go, oh, that used to be Del Taco right across from circus, and then that used to be this. Like, you know, you just sort of see the ghosts of what used to kind of be there, and it's beautiful to watch people make their own way now. But it's interesting to look back and go, I can still see the way that and feel the way that kind of felt right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting to have those conversations with people.
Do you remember like the Gold Coast? Now, unfortunately, they closed down during the pandemic. And there was also a place called Yukon Mining.
That's where we always went after Peanuts on Mondays and Fridays.
That was the place. It was like a 24-hour diner. And that parking lot with the strip mall was very active with sex workers. And we just
constantly
like sit there and watch and then go outside and kiki and smoke cigarettes. And it was,
There was a Trader Joe's in the same parking lot.
Yes.
Yes. And then there was like a little taco shop as well. But it always seemed to be closed.
I don't remember the taco shop, but there's another taco place that's still
Los
24
Tacos.
Hours. It's still there.
By the 7-Eleven.
By the 7-Eleven,
And that's then, of course, Donut Time up the street, which is another area that was frequented. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And the street cruising. I mean, I learned how to cruise on, like, La Jolla between Santa Monica and Melrose. The beat. I guess they called it Vaseline Alley.
Of course. And then there would be like just
Circus
off
of Books
there
was
would
like
be
there.
Romaine Street back here. So you could like kind of park.
Yeah. There's still signs that say no turning after 10 p.m.
Yes,
from the
cruising. Yes.
I actually got pulled over. I was 17 in my Jeep. And my friend, she didn't believe me that this happened in that area. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, there's guys just like hooking up. And that's where I kind of learned how to. Anyway, so we got pulled over. And she was, I didn't have a license and we got arrested and it was right on the corner of like right in front of Circus of Books. It was so embarrassing.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And this was the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the way things were. I often talk about how once upon a time, like before apps, there was cruising was more prevalent. And now, which may be good or maybe bad, people could just type in their phone. Even on their very first time looking for somebody, I want this, and this. Don't answer unless you're these things. And so then they end up finding what they think they like. But back in the day, you're like, oh, I went home with a cowboy.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I went home with a leather man. Oh my gosh, I went home with a model. I went home with someone's dad. Like you would find your way by going, I didn't know I liked this kind of guy, but I love this kind of guy.
It was exciting.
Yeah, it was different. Yeah. And of course, yes, unsafe in many ways, but everything's unsafe in many ways.
I mean, it's still unsafe to invite a complete stranger to your house
it
or you go
be
to their
more
house.
Unsafe.
You have no idea what, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it was definitely a different time. But you know, I was in Paris recently and I've, street cruising is very much still alive.
Oh, it is.
And well, oh my God, I got cruised and it was like the most exciting, fun. I felt like I was 21 again.
I love that.
I sound so old. We sound old right
now.
We
are. Well, we're old.
We sound so old.
You'll always be younger, but we're older now. Listen, you have, speaking of, being cruised. No. But speaking of being cruised and where you are is in my mind and in the minds of everyone, a porn star, you have something launching in November.
Yes.
Yes.
I do.
Tell us about that.
I'm going to be a Fleshjack guy. So I have one of those.
is it a perfume?
It's a perfume line.
It's a perfume.
I have a dildo and I have a fleshlight coming out.
Okay.
So they took a scan of my anatomy. And they sent me a replica that I had to like, take pictures next to for size and accuracy and everything. So it's all good and it should be available in November.
Now, of course you have like a Twitter so people can probably follow that and that's where they can find out exactly when and where they can purchase this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And on my Instagram as well.
Yeah.
They have a Fleshjack has a Instagram friendly, profile. So
I think this is awesome. I mean, I think what a cool idea. There's, you know, listen, you provide fantasy for people. You create the imagery for that. I'm a firm believer that I do think that there is a portion of not just the queer community, but the world in general that loves to sort of villainize people that create adult content, but they love to consume that content.
Yeah. I mean, everybody watches it. Everybody watches it. And if they don't, if they say they don't, they're probably lying.
It's healthy and wonderful.
Yeah. And also it's like, you know, but they villainize us and they kind of, you know, everybody want, what, let me rephrase this. Like it's happened recently where it's like, they'll invite you to the bedroom kind of thing, but they don't want to be seen with you in public kind
of
thing.
Of course.
You know, they don't invite you to party. They invite you to the bedroom afterwards.
Well, and what you're saying is exactly true about what we're talking about. When people say, oh, you're not similar. Are we not? Because there are those of us that have certain appearances that are very niche.
Yeah.
And there are people that have a sexual attraction to certain niches, as you know, and as I know. And they are very, there's people that are like, oh, I want to objectify. I want a Middle Eastern man. Mm-hmm. And I want you to have an accent. Or I want a big fat man in a dress, but I want him to look like a girl and I want to fuck the shit out of him. And they want to do all these things, but then they're not going to tell anyone. My
no.
God, no, because you would know my proclivities. You would know what I do. That's disgusting.
It's the hypocrisy of it.
Of course.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, standing next to one another, you look at all these people in the world that are so different. Listen, there's people out there that want to fuck every single one of the people that you see. We know that.
Yeah.
And it happens, especially in the world. And that's why I say it's so important that you speak about the people that you grew up with, because you know this is happening and you're providing this fantasy. Now, look. If that's what, and I know people are going to want this product. They should want this product.
I hope so.
And this is the safety that you are providing them. They get to have, quote unquote, a piece of you.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get around everywhere.
It's exciting. I never thought that I would be successful in this industry until, actually, you helped me a lot.
Really?
You don't remember? In the beginning? It was like 2017-ish. We used to talk a lot, DM and everything. And at the time, I was like kind of playing with drag again and doing
hair.
And then I wanted to do porn.
Yeah.
And I would DM you like, oh, I'm so nervous. I'm so like, I don't know if I can do it. I was insecure about my body.
Right.
And you're like, bitch, just fucking do it.
Yeah.
Like you were one of like my big pushers and supporters in the beginning.
I didn't think of it that way. I really didn't.
You totally were. And that's another reason why... I have so much love for you, because even over the years, you've always just been so kind and so supportive, even when I look like shit and drag or whatever it was. And now with the porn thing, you were like one of the few people who were so supportive and tried to push me into just not into the, but just doing something that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And giving me the encouragement.
Well, you've been supportive of me because I look like shit in porn. So, I mean, you know, there we go. I mean,
that's not true.
It's one or the other. No, but, let's take a quick break.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's take a quick break. And we are back. We're here with Chirac, and we're talking about all of it and none of it. Because, listen, I have a short attention span. I start listening, and I start talking about something else, and then I remember something you said. But that's, you know, I feel like that's just talking to any of your friends, right? Like,
I'm the same way. I'm so ADD.
I'm all over the place. We have a portion of the podcast that we like to call the Annals. And then the Annals of the Inbox. But one time it was typed wrong and we were reading it as the Annals of the Inbox. Either way, they're letters. They're just letters.
Got it.
That people send in. And so we're going to start with the first one. Let me see. I have them in here. They're like literally written like little snail mail. I keep saying I'm going to bring my letter opener from my other desk.
I'll bring you one next time.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go to... Where did we say we could get them things remembered? Okay. First letter from Luigi. Dear Delta and Chirac, my name is Luigi and I'm from Florida, now living in Chicago. Is it petty to not want to go to a gender reveal party? My sister is having one for her spawn all the way in Florida, and she seems so excited for it. I know she put a lot of effort into organizing it. Honestly, she may have well slapped me in the face and spit on my bussy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, gosh.
Not her spawn.
Because I'm a gender nonconformist. I do not believe in pink for girls and blue for boys. I've always been very vocal about this. Plus, this bitch had the nerve to forward this list of gift ideas. In this economy, no ma'am. Honestly, I don't think it's worth the plane ticket, and I'm scared that it will ruin my relationship with my family. Should I perpetuate this straight ceremony or just say fuck it? Help me, Delta and Chirac. You are my only hope. What do you think about a gender reveal party?
You know what? I had never even heard about... We don't have really gender reveal parties in our culture, so I had never really heard about it until a few years ago when they set some... mountain on fire.
Yeah.
I just think it's so fucking stupid.
I think it's stupid too.
So stupid.
I think it's stupid too.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say you know, if it ruins your relationship with your family because you are trying to not spend unnecessary money on plane tickets, on lodging, on eating, on gifts for something like this, then I think there's a bigger something at play with your family if that is going to really set them off. I also have responsibilities to family that I sort of pick and choose the battle versus the war. Okay. And sometimes I'm like, I can bend on this. I'll just go do it because it's not, no one here is going to listen to my argument. They're not willing to change. So I'm just going to let it be what it's going to be. But if it's hurting you that much, and also, I mean, if you're thinking literally financially, if it's an issue, that's already the answer. Yeah. That's the answer because you have to survive. You need to, you know, going on a trip because somebody wants to tell you what color the baby's going to wear. That's really quite a luxury to have that money.
Yeah, that's a phone call or a text. Congratulations, I'm so happy for you. Like, it's not a, for me, it's not a plane ride and a party.
I don't think so either. No. And I don't think you should feel bad for not buying something on that list.
No.
I think if you want to buy a gift, no matter what the value is, whether it's maybe a beautiful framed something or a poem or whatever it is that you can do. But, you know, more than anything, your best wishes is really all you have to give, I think.
I'm 100% agreement with you.
I'm not going to that party.
I'm not going to that party either.
But fuck that party.
Fuck that party.
You know what? How about this? I'm not going to your party. How about you go fuck yourself?
That's the text.
That's all. You know what? Forget all the flowers and all this other stuff. We're not going to the party. I fucking told you. We're not going to the party because we don't care about you assigning a gender to your baby. You heard?
That part.
That's it. All right,
let's read another letter. Period.
That's simple.
Simple.
I was trying to be diplomatic.
Especially if they are a gender nonconforming individual. Yes. And for the sister to like throw, like it's just, it's, she should have more awareness. The sister should.
She's selfish.
Yeah, selfish.
Your sister's a selfish bitch. How about that? You don't have to tell her. Send her, just send it. Push video record on your phone and then start the video and then send her this.
Yeah.
You're having your gender reveal party. You're pissed off because I can't afford to go. And also that I don't want to go because it goes against my ethics. Well, that's because you're selfish. Okay. Well, we have another letter from Angel.
I love you.
Hi, Delta and Chirac. I'm writing from London.
Ooh.
I'm a fitness instructor, and for the first time in history, one of the gym brands I work with has decided to come out in support of the LGBTQ community over Pride Month.
Okay.
Besides plastering the usual six-striped rainbow flag here and there, they actually made an effort and organized charity spin classes whose benefits are going to an LGBTQ charity. So far, so good. Where I have the problem is that when they told one of their gay instructors who will teach the classes that his playlist was too much, they said that his playlist was too much.
Mm.
When I asked if they meant that language, and I thought it was a bit crude for their audience, they merely replied that there was too much Madonna, Kylie, and Whitney, etc., and they wanted to present something different. I think we have enough information, don't we? To my surprise, my colleague accepted to change his playlist. To sum things up, a straight guy told a gay guy to put on his playlist, what to put on his playlist for a Pride event. I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this situation and had you experienced something similar in your careers? So people gatekeeping and telling you what's too gay, especially in your line of work. I just saw this clip.
Yeah.
Somebody sent me and it's an orgy.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Am I in it?
No. Okay. I don't know who's in it really. It did sound from another country, but it sounded European.
Okay.
And three guys are on the bed, and there's a bottom, and then the two tops, and then this group is there, and they're going in. Everyone's having a great time, and you hear them going, "Woo, yeah!" And one goes, "Yo, girl," because he's taking it like like a champ.
Yeah.
And the one goes, "Girl," and I just think in the line of work that you've been in, are there people that you've worked with where if something like that was to happen, they would say that's not what we're producing here?
Oh, of course, in studio porn for sure. Something like that would never fly.
Right.
Absolutely not. and you kind of have to put on this like, and they'll coach you and like, just like that cheesy porn, like,
that's the fantasy.
Yeah. So you kind of have to like put that on. And then a lot of, I mean, me included, like I feel like I'm very mask and straight presenting, but when I open my mouth and I start talking, it's a different story. So it's like to have to like play that character just for that role is kind of it's kind of interesting sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I hear this letter and I do think it's fucked up. It is, but you know, this is, we've been in this place now. I definitely feel like it's been not just maybe the past few years, but definitely through the pandemic when everyone's done everything digitally. Mm-hmm. Corporations have really been coming through the woodwork with having everyone represented something in Pride. So, you know, we always talk about, oh, we're proud, and that logo's up through the month of July. And I absolutely don't want any straight people telling me how it is to be queer. No. I don't want that. But I do understand the idea of taking every fucking penny they have. I absolutely understand it. I like to live ethically, so I don't want to have to bend. So in the sense of bending in that way, if it's a little bit of a battle versus the war, if I can work my way around it and still end up presenting what we need to present so that we get our image out there, I think it's important. But I don't want money that bad. I really don't. And I've turned down way too much money and way too many great opportunities to be compromised because somebody said, you have to be this way. And I'm like, I can't be that way. And I know that the same is true for you because you've had a lot of opportunities, I'm sure, that have come your way.
Yeah. And at this point in my life and my age and my career, it's like, it's not worth it to me anymore to compromise myself in that way at all. Like, I want to be in control of the way that I am presenting myself and it represented. And if they want you to cut out Whitney, Madonna and Kylie at Pride, like, what? I don't understand.
Wait, what songs did you want at the spin class, by the way? I mean, I've never taken a spin class, but I've certainly never taken a gay pride spin class.
No.
But I bet you Kylie, Madonna, and Whitney Houston are for sure going to be featured in
every playlist, I'm sure.
And how long is that class? Maybe 45 minutes, I'm guessing? It's a cardio class. Is that how long that stuff goes?
I think so.
45 minutes and you don't have room for Whitney Houston, Madonna? Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
What we really need to be talking about actually in this letter is I want to go back to really just the sort of the syntax and really just some of the phrases. Well, it's not even in this letter. It's in the other letter, actually. Now we need to really, I want to go back.
What's a syntax?
Well, you know, it's just the way sentence structure is how somebody leaves the end or the beginning of something. Uh-huh. I want to go back to Luigi's letter. Luigi said she may as well have slapped me in the face and spit on my bussy. Have you ever spit on someone? Maybe not their bussy, but in their mouth? That surprises me. I'm curious.
You already know the answer to that question.
Do I? How would I know?
Yes, I've spit in people's mouths.
More often than you said girl during the video?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever said girl during a video. I say it in my normal day-to-day.
Like if you were just having like a normal relation, would you likely say girl? A sexual relationship not being videotaped.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever said girl while having sex.
It just seems weird because it's like, where does it come from?
You know what? I have with, do you know who Brock Banks is?
Yeah.
So Brock Banks is like one of my besties. And we've never filmed one-on-one, but we've done like three ways. Uh-huh. Because it's kind of weird if we do one-on-one because we're like sisters.
Right.
But yes, during our filming, I have said girl or like, oh my God, girl, you look good or something like that.
I mean, that's honest.
I swear.
That's honest.
It comes out for sure.
I love that. All right. Well, you know what? Thank you for joining me with these letters. These letters, like honestly, this type of information is what people want. They want to hear more than one way and then they'll make their decision. You know, we all love to hear what other people
Where
have
did these
say.
Come from?
These are letters that people write in.
Really?
Yeah. And also, if you're listening to this and you want to send in a letter for me to read on the show, you can email me at readmedelta@gmail.com. Like, you know, like read me, but physically read the letter.
I love this.
Yeah. Thank you for coming out and being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
This is fun. It goes by really fast.
Yeah, it really did go by really fast.
Yeah.
This is a treat, though.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for you. You know that I'm also excited for November. I hope you are, too. Where can people find you on social media?
On Instagram, you can find me at @_Sharok, Sharok. Mm-hmm. And Twitter, it's just @TheSharok, one word.
Yeah, I like that. And your account hasn't been suspended or anything?
No, I'm on my third Instagram account, so I'm trying to be really, really good and not post anything that's going to get me deleted again. But Twitter is still there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Well, thank you all so much for listening to Very Delta, and a special hello to everyone watching the show on the Mom Podcast YouTube channel. Very Delta comes out every Monday right here on the Very That podcast feed and on YouTube. And if you're new here, I'd love for you to subscribe to make sure that you do not miss any episodes. If you'd like to send me a question, comment, or any type of communication, email me at readmedelta@gmail.com. And of course, you can follow me on Instagram at DeltaWork. I'll see you next week right here, where we like to keep things very Delta. To listen to Very Delta one day early and ad-free, sign up for Mom Plus at mompodcasts.plus. Very Delta is produced by Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by Delta Work and produced by Maxwell Esposito. Engineered by Margot Padilla and editing and sound design by Will Pitts. Executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Big Dipper, and Joe Cilio.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.